Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retold. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be discussing in this episode came out on April 2nd, 2008. And for me, Bob, this was sort of a light week. It was only 34 comics and two CDs, or two CD sets, I should say.
So one of those, I know what you got. It was the 52 Volume 2, because I got that one. What was the other one?
52 Volume 1.
Ah, so an older one.
Yes.
That came out. Yeah, I got that also. I got the 35 comics, the Green Arrow 13-inch collector figure from DC Direct finally came out.
Oh, nice.
And that thing is really nice. He has a quiver that you put on his back, and it had just like about 20 or 25 arrows. A lot of them were just regular arrows, but it had like a boxing glove arrow, and just all kinds of different interesting little arrow heads on the arrows. And you can stick all the arrows in the quiver, and the bow folds up kind of like Green Arrow. You know how Green Arrow's bow kind of folds up and it like sticks into the back of his quiver for him to carry it? It does that exact same thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
It has a little slot in the back of the quiver that you can stick in. Of course, I have him standing up, and he's just holding the bow in one hand, and he's holding an arrow in his other hand, so.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
In fact, looking at him, though, I see he has the bow in the wrong hand. I have to move it. he would be holding the bow in his left hand, not his right hand.
Yeah, these continuity errors just drive me nuts.
Yeah, but then I got a manga, and the Women of the DCU Cheetah bust came out, the Terry and Rachel Dodson designed one.
Well, as a quick update on where I'm at on my reading, since we all know I'm behind, I have, how many did I get this week? I got another 34 comics this week. I read 8, so that means I'm getting further behind. I have 210 comics on my current to-read stack, and that does not include Wildstorm or a few other things I kind of pull out and put in other, damn, I'm way behind on stacks.
I'm nowhere near as far behind as you, but I've probably got about 100 yet to read. They're mostly DC and indie. I'm pretty much up to speed on Marvel. I've been kind of leaning towards Marvel lately. DC has kind of put me off with the whole countdown thing. And strangely, even though they've kind of put me off on the DC universe with the whole countdown thing, one of the only things I'm up to date on in DC is Countdown, which
I'm 5 weeks behind on that.
I inflict it on myself every week, so.
The only DC from this week that I read, other than what we're going to review, was Action Comics.
Yeah, I have to read that one.
Yes, you do. It's Geoff Johns, so it's going to be good.
I know, I'm just, I'm behind.
That's one, though, that anyone who's not reading that Superman and the Legion arc really should. It's great stuff. But that's what we come to expect from Geoff Johns.
Ready to dive into The Trials of Shazam? That was a very strange pronunciation. Or Shazam, even. I wonder if he mispronounces the word if he turns into Captain Marvel.
Or at least a variation of Captain Marvel.
Shazam, and he turns into pink outfit or something. I don't know.
I've been liking this series, but I'm a little frustrated by how long it's taken to get out, because if you recall, this launched out of the Brave New World one shot, and that came out in August 2006. This thing started then in October. It kind of went monthly for the first couple issues, then it kind of went bi-monthly. Now it's gotten to where it's almost quarterly, so.
But it's over now, so you don't have to worry about it anymore.
true, but it really, I think, cut down on the momentum of the story for me, and this is one that I think, as a result, is going to read much better in trade, just because you're not going to have months and months between it. And it's certainly one I recommend in trade.
What I found interesting about this last issue, and I don't remember exactly when the issue 11 came out, It's probably long enough ago that it didn't matter.
It was about 3 months.
Yeah. I only vaguely remembered what specifically had been going on because it had been, you know, I probably read, you know,
a few hundred,
including back issues and stuff, 400 or 500 comics since the last time this thing came out. But what was interesting to me was new artist for this issue, right? I think it was a new artist. He certainly, maybe they had him in on 11 or something like that. Certainly Howard Porter was the one who, was it Howard Porter? Who was the one who had started out this series?
Howard Porter, I believe, started it, and he did through issue, let's see, he did issue 2, I'm zipping through Comic Book DB, he did 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He did more than I thought. And then 9 was when this this guy who did this one,
Mauro Cassioli.
Yeah, Mauro Cassioli. Wasn't sure how to pronounce that, and I hate butchering names. He started with number 9. He did 10. He did 11.
And here he is on 12.
Yeah,
I like his art more than I liked Howard Porter's art on this. So that was a positive thing. When I read this issue, I almost treated it as a standalone issue because it had been so long. Actually, as a standalone issue, even though for someone who hasn't read any of the previous issues, I think you could read this issue and get a lot out of it.
I would agree with that. I think they did a good job of kind of resetting the scene, letting you know what the stakes were. And it was just a good issue.
Right, and there's a lot of really cool action in it, just tons of guest stars. I mean, basically the Justice League and Shadow Pact are guest starring in this issue. You get lots of very iconic imagery in it, and it sets the stage for the next iteration of Captain Marvel in the DC Universe. So this would be a great standalone issue if someone is interested in the character at all of Captain Marvel. You don't need to have read 1 through 11 to pick this issue up and enjoy it, which is actually somewhat different than most limited series that I've run. It kind of stood out in my mind as I was reading it, because usually a last issue, it just kind of closes off the storyline, and it's good in the context of the series. But, you know, this one I thought could stand on its own quite nicely.
Yeah, and I agree that that is kind of unusual because, like you said, a lot of last issues are so reliant on all the setup they've done getting to that point that it's just the big action scene and the big resolution. But if you just start there, you've got no idea the context. And I thought they did a good job in the course of the story recapping what had, you know, gone on to get to this event and why this event was so important. Now, the other thing I found kind of interesting in a subtle way at the end of this is this is all about Freddy trying to become Captain Marvel. Except what really happens at the end, Freddy doesn't become Captain Marvel, he becomes Shazam. It's a subtle naming thing, but it's like they're moving away from the Captain Marvel name entirely, almost.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they just want to keep the confusion away from Marvel. Fine. That's not a bad thing because, you know, even when they had, you know, like this. I mean, it's always the Trials of Shazam, and
exactly.
Shazam was the title because they can't put Captain Marvel as the title of a comic because of copyright or trademark issues with Marvel. So, makes sense. I mean, you're rebooting the character. Just do it, although, you know, you do get to the – I guess Freddy of anybody, you know, it's not a spoiler. I mean, people should know that it's Freddy Freeman who's kind of – you know, moving towards the mantle of the power of Shazam. He's used to not being able to say his own name.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Captain Marvel, he could always say his own name, right?
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, but Freddie Freeman, since he was Captain Marvel Jr. and he got his powers by saying Captain Marvel, he could never say his own name. Now, as Shazam, he can't say, if he's calling himself Shazam, he can't say his own name either.
I think at one point they may have established that with the Billy Batson, Captain Marvel, Shazam, or whatever, in control of the power now, that he's tweaked it to where you can choose if you call down the power or not when you say the word.
Ah, so he, okay, well, that would be handy, so he could say, hi, I'm Shazam, and not, zap, big lightning bolt come down.
He'd be like, oh, man. Yeah. So I just thought that was an interesting choice, kind of trademark-wise or whatever. So it's cool. And they did a few subtle things, you know, with the costume. So it's not, I don't think, exactly like the previous one. But, you know, virtually identical. It's cool to see them have kind of reset the character, gotten him to a point where, you know, he's a viable Justice League member, or they can do pretty much whatever they want with him now. And I really hope out of this we see more of the whole Shazam family.
Right. The main thing they did with the costume is it looks like he's got kind of a regular cape as opposed to that little kind of really short, weird, kind of off-the-shoulder sort of cape.
Right, right. And the lightning bolt seems wider and fatter, and he seems to still have the flap or whatever on the chest thing.
Right. Yeah, the actual emblem itself, I leave up more to artistic license, because, you know, how many interpretations of Superman have you seen where the S is, like, wildly variant in size, sure. And that's not, like, any kind of official branding kind of thing with the S. But, you know, usually his cape, you know, Superman doesn't all of a sudden have, like, a cape like Spawn or something, you know, or like a little weird half cape. So putting this like kind of like a normal length, you know, Superman type of cape on him is different than Captain Marvel has been in the past.
It also doesn't have the yellow little squiggly things around the edges.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm okay with. It looks good. So, I mean,
and someone who likes the Captain Marvel Shazam character should, I mean, they've got to be buying this already, but that big full-page image, you know, right near the end, three or four pages in from the end, that's a really nice image.
Yeah.
Of character.
Yeah, full-page splash of him. And, I mean, the artist just did a great job throughout this. There was some really good images. The storytelling was really clear. And just in the course of the story, particularly in some of the fight scene, you get just this iconic stuff of, you know, Batman, Wonder Woman, some of the other characters, and in a way that flows naturally in the story. I've seen other books where it's like, okay, I want to do a pinup page of this character so I can sell it for big bucks on the original art market or whatever. And certainly I think this guy can get some big bucks for some of these pages, but it was clear he was not drawing them solely for that reason. He was servicing right. The story. This is one I highly recommend, certainly worth picking up in trade, and I certainly want to see where DC takes the Shazam family next.
Right. I'm going to move into Young X-Men.
Sure.
By Mark Guggenheim and Yannick Paquette.
I felt one way about this series up until, or this issue I should say, until the last page, and that last page really kind of shifted my opinion of what was going on in the story. And it made me question if somebody was really who they claimed to be. Now, I don't want to give away kind of what's going on.
Right. I had the same thing, but not the exact same reaction. I had one reaction all the way up to the last page, and then a different one on the last page. And my reaction throughout the entire issue was, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't care who any of these people are. And I will not be buying another issue of Young X-Men after I force myself to read this issue. And then I read the last page and I said, that's interesting. I'm going to need to read issue number 2 to find out what went on here.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think part of the difference in our reactions is I knew who a lot of these characters were. I'm not going to claim I knew who all of them were. There were one or two that it's like, now who are these again? Although I'm sure I've read all about them. But they've got Dust, who'd been in, you know, various incarnations of the New Mutants, Academy X, and actually the New X-Men at one point, I believe, with back when Grant Morrison was on it and stuff. So I knew who she was. I knew who Blindfold was. I knew who Santos was, the big rocky guy. And the wolf kid or whatever, couldn't really place him. I'm sure I've read stories he's been in, but that's how memorable he wasn't.
Well, see, that's what's interesting to me about this title, and I had the same reaction over in that Exiles book, as you recall. Mm-hmm. The X-Universe at Marvel has become so incestuous that a new reader who hasn't been reading X-Men in every single book in the X universe comes in, and they make no attempt to make a number one issue new reader friendly.
Yeah.
I'm reading this issue. These people aren't even calling each other by name for the most part. I have no idea who they are. I'm kind of like sort of picking it up as I go along, but I'm reading it and it's like, I don't care. And then on the last page, there are four characters shown who I am familiar with and I do care about, and I want to see what happens to them. But, you know, it's just this whole issue was a failure for the most part, you know, on that. And just as an interesting counterpoint, a book that came out just this past Wednesday on the 9th, I was at the comic shop picking up some other books, and I picked up off the rack the Number of the Beast from Wildstorm. Mm-hmm. And I have not been reading most of the Wildstorm or any of the Wildstorm universe books. For the, you know, most part in Wildstorm, I get like, you know, Ex Machina and, you know, things like that that are not the Wildstorm superhero type of books. So I flipped through it. It looked interesting. It had some nice art. And I said, oh, you know what? This is a series. It's supposed to be moving Wildstorm along. Let me just get this issue and give it a read and see what it's like. And I read through the issue and I don't know what it was. It's hard for me to put my finger on. Now, Number of the Beast is by Scott Beatty and Chris Sprouse. I read through this issue. I didn't know who any of the characters were. I had never seen these characters before, but worked kind of seamlessly into the dialogue. They're calling each other by name. There's a little bit of banter going on. You know, it's like, you know. And, you know, one of the guys says, hey, blow it out your afterburner, Aeronaut. And the other guy says, no, it's Aeronaut, you know. So, you know, okay, he's Aeronaut, you know. And they just kind of – there's that kind of superhero kind of banter. I kind of love.
Yeah.
You see what their powers are. They introduce themselves. They do some character pieces. They end up in a diner and they're kind of chatting with each other a little bit. And – it's so 180 degrees different from the Young X-Men, because here I'm reading a book where I've never seen any of the characters. And the reason that I want to buy number two and three and beyond now is because they did such a good job in a number one issue of introducing the characters. So anyway, I just found it interesting because I read both those books this week and I had very different opinions of the different styles of starting off with the number one.
Well, and it all comes down to accessibility. Like we were saying on the last issue of Trials of Shazam, that was an accessible issue. And here was one that, you're right, they didn't do a good job really introducing the characters, giving you a reason to care. And if it wasn't for that last page reveal or whatever, you know, I could see a lot of people like you not coming back, and can't blame them for it. So,
I mean, my assessment of Young X-Men is if you're really into X-Men and you're really familiar with all the ins and outs of the X-Men universe, this is a book that I'm sure you'll enjoy. I didn't find it intrinsically unenjoyable. I just found it inaccessible. You know, that's the best way to say it. They just didn't do any kind of effort to bring me into the world.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to our independent comic of the week, which is Anna
sure.
Mercury number one from Avatar.
She certainly has big hair. That's all I can say.
Yes, she does. Very big hair. The art's good. The story's good. I found this a lot of fun. This was another one where on the last page they do kind of a twist, and it's like, okay, that's a little interesting. But it was more the quality of the rest of the issue that has me interested, and not so much that last page twist.
Yeah, very interesting to me in that Warren Ellis writes so many different genres, and he does it so well. I was just reading some back issues I got the other day, a series that Ellis did called Wolfskin from Avatar a year or so ago that I had never picked up. And this is kind of a barbarian type of character, you know, where it's just, you know, swords and, you know, fighting and all this kind of stuff. It's just that kind of genre. And then I read the Gravel book from Ellis, which is sort of a you know, Gravel's a combat magician, and it's kind of a supernatural sort of story. But, you know, my way of talking about Gravel is really that, you know, if Constantine was a guy who, you know, like personally would go out and kick butt and take names, you know, that's what, instead of just manipulating people, that's what Gravel is. Completely different genre, but he does an excellent job of it. And then you flip over and see something like Dr. Sleepless, you know, and that again is a completely another sort of take on things. I mean, this is more of an action sci-fi kind of series, Anna Mercury, I would say. There is that sci-fi kind of element to it, but it's very definitely kind of a fast-paced action kind of book.
I would agree with that. It's definitely trying to have a almost more kinetic feel at times with people moving, things happening. Matter of fact, there's very little where any scene kind of stays in one place for too long. One or two of those, but most of it's just on the go. And, I mean, Ellis is a really good writer, and I think he shines best in this sort of a thing versus, you know, superhero stuff. Because he's good at throwing in the cool sci-fi ideas, and this is a better venue for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's almost like, and he's not exclusive with Avatar, but he does a lot of his stuff now with Avatar. And I am really enjoying a lot of the different things that he's doing over at Avatar. So I kind of like him having this kind of playground over here. There's just lots of different variety of things that he does. And he's got a little more freedom, I think, to kind of do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
There were some scenes in this book, though, that were a little violent for your taste, I'll wager.
One or two, but it was kind of okay in the course of the story. It didn't feel overly gratuitous. I could have done without them, like when she's smashing into the room and stuff. But it at least stopped short of, you know, ripping somebody literally in half, like we've seen over in some of the DC comics.
That's true. I mean, they did a relatively understated job compared to the gore level in some other Ellis books, like Black Summer, for instance, or you know, the aforementioned Wolfskin. The violence she dealt out upon these guys was relatively subdued, although if you look at the art, you do see like a...
That's why I don't look too closely at some of those panels.
You don't look too close. You see like a tooth kind of like flying out of the guy's mouth. You know, or actually a couple of them if you look really closely.
I'm not in favor of teeth flying out of mouths on the panel, but I prefer that to other parts.
Yeah.
So, no, that's part of why I don't read a lot of his other stuff at Avatar, is it's a bit more hardcore on the violence or some of the other stuff than I care for. Not to say it's bad or anything. It's one of those cases where, ironically enough, sometimes the better it is, the worse it is for me. So I thought this was a fun story. I'm curious to see where it goes, particularly with the twist at the end. But I'm also curious if once this miniseries is over and done, if we're ever going to come back to this or not.
Well, you know, interestingly, he does tend to go back to characters that he likes. Maybe not soon. Well, that's sort of the pattern with, as one example, the Wolfskin character. I just saw in the current previews this Wolfskin annual that they had a big ad for, and it looked really interesting to me. And I said, okay, well, let me look at that. But then I discovered that there had been a previous Wolfskin series that had just, I had not noticed, flown under my radar or something. So I went out and bought that 3-issue series as back issues. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. And that cemented my decision to buy the annual. But it's been over a year since he's put out that series. And now he's putting out this extra kind of like annual, kind of like giant-sized issue. So he is revisiting the character, you know. Now other ones, like I'm kind of feeling like when he gets to the end of something like Black Summer, he will have said what he needs to say with that stuff. So that might not go on. Anna Mercury, especially since when you read this, they're giving sort of a title to it, you know, Anna Mercury, the Cutter. I'm kind of figuring this is going to go on and have different story arcs related to, you know, different things.
Yeah.
With the character.
That makes sense. So.
And, you know, the Gravel character himself, this is another one that I really enjoyed the Gravel comics, and I didn't realize until Damien over at Cryptographic clued me in on it that William Gravel, the character, had been in a whole series of graphic novels that Ellis put out from Avatar. It's the whole Strange series. There was Strange Kiss, Stranger Kisses, Strange Killings, you know, and there's a whole series, and I guess they were out in original trades. They were not comics that were collected in trades. They were direct to trade. And I have since ordered all of those. So I'll be giving those a read.
I remember seeing Strange Kiss and some of those others when they were solicited and whatnot originally. But I could never really tell if they were for me or not. And at the time I was shopping locally, asked the store owner, and he just kind of looked at me funny like, you're kidding, right? It's like, well, okay. So I never picked them up.
So anyway, I mean, I think this book is going to do well with people who do like sci-fi, and they like action. There's kind of a Matrix-y element to it. If you liked the Matrix movies, well, let's say if you liked the Matrix movies that you liked, because most people don't like all the Matrix movies.
Well, all right, you know, then.
If you like that kind of thing, though, and you like action, check this out. It was a fun read.
Yeah. I could do without all the variant covers and stuff like that that Avatar tends to do.
Yeah, well, that's Avatar's thing. They
Well, it's also why I rarely, if ever, buy any Avatar stuff. This is the first Avatar comic I can remember buying in the last couple of years.
But the thing that I will say, you know, which I do like with some of the companies who do this, and Avatar's one of them, they do have separate order codes in previews for the different covers. So when I order this, I can go in and say, okay, I want the wraparound cover, or I want the painted cover, or I want, you know, whatever cover. And I can pick, and they have images of them in previews, or they have them online. You can see what they look like. So even if, you know, I can order that specifically and get the one that I want, and it's not kind of left up to the whim of what I'm going to be able to pick up off the rack at the store that somebody who got to the store before me didn't snatch up the one that I want, you know, or whatever. I can just say, hey, I want this one, and it can be specifically ordered for me.
I just don't like how sometimes after the fact, after that issue comes out, a month or two later, they'll solicit more covers for that issue.
That's, yeah, they have a tendency to do these auxiliary editions, which I guess are similar. I never buy them, but I'm assuming they're similar to what Marvel does as director's cuts.
Yeah, well, they scared me off, or not scared me off, but pushed me away when they were doing the Stargate stuff. They were doing a bunch of miniseries. They all had different, you know, subtitles or whatever. They had a bazillion different cover variants, and it got to where I was confused of, do I have this or not? So I finally just stopped ordering them entirely.
Yeah.
But hey, if it works for them, though, that it works for them. That's great. You know what I mean?
Well, kind of how is it working for them, though? Where are a lot of these books showing up on the 300? We kind of went through that.
Yeah, they're not showing up very high. But
yeah.
I think that's as much a factor of them being an independent publisher than the number of covers they've got.
Yeah. Well, it's working less good for them on these books than it is for Dynamite with Red Sonja, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. So anything else? Is that pretty much it?
I just wanted to remind people to come out to the forums and give us your feedback on the various episodes that you're listening to. If you like something, if you don't like something, we do have feedback threads out there. Check us out on Facebook. You can check us out on Comic Space. There's lots of ways to let us know. And also, we're on iTunes. A lot of people will subscribe via iTunes. If you can go out on iTunes and leave a review for us, that's great also. We would welcome any feedback that you can give, and we do take that into account. We got some feedback on our last previews episode about the ordering of where we put the interviews in the episode, and we're going to reconsider how we do that for next time. So we do pay attention to your feedback. So please, please give us feedback. And you can also email us anytime at theguys@comicbookpage.com. And we read those emails and respond to those also. So thanks a lot for listening, and let us know what you think.
Yeah. And one other note on the iTunes, if you are using, well, really iTunes or any pod-catching client, you might want to have it set to grab more than just the most recent episode, depending how often you have it check, because we've, in many weeks, like this past one, have a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday episode. We don't always do that. Sometimes we just have the weekly spotlight, but other times we will have multiple ones, and we want to make sure you're getting all the episodes you want to listen to.
Right, and that typically happens near the beginning of the month because the Mayo report, the preview spotlight, and, you know, every week we do the weekly spotlight. But the Mayo report and the preview spotlight will often pile up on each other just because of timeliness of when those things tend to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So it's usually kind of that first week of the month like this where, you know, you get the weekly spotlight on a Monday, you'll get the previews thing on that Wednesday, and we're trying to do that as close to when the previews comes out as practical, followed by the either the comics or the trades Mayo report, and then the following Monday you get another weekly spotlight, and the next Wednesday the other Mayo report for the month. So, but definitely give us your feedback, let us know what you think. So, are we done now?
Yep. Join us next week when we discuss Wonder Woman number 19 from DC, Nova number 12 from Marvel, and Gru, Hell on Earth number 4 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.